Hey, it's Ash. Now, today's guest is Jim Lico, the CEO of Fortive Corporation. It's the Fortune 500 company based in Washington that you've probably never heard of before. Well, until now, of course. Now, you want to be sure to stick around for the entire episode today to get a peek into what Jim's childhood was like growing up in Detroit when General Motors was the biggest company in the world. You will hear Jim share some valuable experiences early in his career that he hadn't shared before. And Jim shares with us what we should know if we aspire to be business leaders one day. Jim was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, with a large extended family. Now, Jim's father always had high expectations for him growing up, and he admits that even though he would complain at times when he was younger, he will never forget how high expectations were actually a gift from his father.
Well, I grew up in the Detroit area of in Michigan. I always say I sort of won the family lottery. I have great parents and great siblings, and I was a sports fanatic in every way, played lots of sports. And so probably most of my childhood is doing something with a football, baseball, or basketball.
So what's your favorite childhood memory?
Probably Sunday dinners at my grandmother's. I was lucky enough to have a big extended family, and 30 people in a 900 square foot house every Sunday is something you never forget.
When you reflect on your life, if there was one person that really helped shape your life principles, who would that person be?
It would have to be my dad. He was a great guy, a wonderful human being, great father, great husband. And, he always did things the right way with integrity. When he would maybe be pushing me to do something, he would always say, and I would complain, that he would always say, "I will pay you the compliment of high expectations." And that has lived with me my whole life.
So like you learned early on that high expectations are, in a way, they're a gift, not kind of like a burden.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's a compliment, that when someone has belief in you and someone really thinks there's nothing you can't do, that they have a responsibility, you know, obviously as a parent, they're going to have high expectations, and that's not out of anything but love and as a compliment.
When I bring up your childhood, what emotion comes to mind? Like, what emotion do you remember feeling most frequently?
Laughter. I was incredibly fortunate to grow up in a house with a mother and a father and a sister and a brother who were incredibly funny. Sometimes the jokes, I was the youngest, so the jokes were often at my own expense, but especially in the early days. But I think at the end of the day, it was love and laughter, and that combination has been something that, you know, I've tried to create my own household, over the last couple of decades.
Now, back when Jim was growing up, General Motors, the big car company you probably heard of before, based in Detroit, was one of the biggest companies in the world. When he was a teenager, Jim worked a lot. He spent a couple summers at General Motors on the factory line, and he would also cut lawns for people around his neighborhood to make some money. Without realizing it, Jim's landscaping business as a teenager actually helped him build a great network. He actually got his first internship from someone he knew in his neighborhood from cutting lawns.
I lived in a neighborhood where a lot of people worked for General Motors, and, you know, I had worked in a factory for a couple of summers, and I was looking for my sort of, you know, to do something in my career. And a friend said, "Hey, we might have an opening in a couple areas. I know somebody." And next thing I know, I had an interview.
And was this a friend that you knew for a long time, or was it?
No, it was somebody in our neighborhood. You know, I had a childhood business as a landscaping business as a child, or not as a child, but as a teenager, that was pretty prolific, actually, like a 6 day a week summer job. And so I was pretty well known through the neighborhood whenever you needed your lawn cut or something. And so I somebody had said, "Hey, what are you doing now?" kind of thing. Right. After I wasn't doing that anymore. And I said, "Well, I'm actually, thinking of this, I'm in college and I'm in this operations research degree and looking to do something in the automotive industry."
So what was your first corporate experience like? I mean, what do you remember it being like the first few days? Like, what were you?
Yeah, Ash, I remember walking, sitting down, and this was in my internship because I actually went to go work in the department I'd worked in the previous summer. So my first day on the job was I had a little bit of experience, but I remember my first day as an intern and showing up in this desk in the sea of desks of a product team that I was on, and engineers and purchasing people and all that. And, and my little, I don't know, desk, and just looking out at the sea of desks and sort of thinking, boy, I am certainly one of many here. And, you know, that's my first reaction to it.
Yeah. So you kind of felt like, was it like insignificance in a way? Cause there's so many.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you sort of think like, hey, I probably had a briefcase and in those days we wore a suit. So you'd wear it, walk in with your brand new suit, and you go in and you think you're going to make this huge difference in the world. And all of a sudden you realize you're just, you know, one of many, and then you have to find a way to contribute, find a way to, you know, to sort of stand out, if you will. And I think that was a pretty good visual for what was needed.
So what was your initial role there?
I was working with suppliers on what was then and is now called continuous improvement or lean manufacturing, helping suppliers who supply General Motors to do things in a lower cost way. And of course, I had a little bit of manufacturing experience from my, as an online man, you know, working on the line in a plant from a couple of years. But this was my first sort of industrial engineering experience. And of course I was with some people who had been doing it for a little while. And, you know, I learned how to do that. And I did that job for, you know, a couple of years.
Your first experience is always like, I just want some experience. But did you have in mind where you wanted to be, like maybe 5 years, or did you have kind of a plan, or was it just like kind of going with the flow? I'm just kind of curious during that.
Yeah. You know, I never had a real plan. Like, you know, I really never, I was always sort of loved what I was doing in the moment and kind of wondering what I was going to do next, but I wasn't as much focused on the next thing as I was. What I did know is that I didn't, even from the first day at General Motors, the company seemed too big. And so I always thought that I probably wouldn't be there more than 5 years. If I had a 5-year plan, it was probably only that after 5 years, I would try to go and work in a company that might be a little smaller. And at the time, I think General Motors was the biggest company in the world. And I was trying to, you know, I thought, you know, my skill set would maybe be in a place slightly smaller. And so I think maybe the only plan I had was that I didn't think I would be there my entire career.
Was there ever a moment, you know, during your time at GM, like early on, when you felt like, oh, wow, I didn't realize this, or like kind of like a moment where you had to stop and be like, wow, this is totally did not realize this, or like a huge like moment where.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think when you start your career, there are so many moments where you realize you don't know anything. I mean, if you're fortunate enough, and I would say when I was at General Motors, I was fortunate enough to get a variety of different assignments over the 5 or 6 years I was there. And what you realize is that particularly early in your career, you know, you're going to get thrown into the deep end of the pool a few times, and you've got to realize like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to learn. Who's going to mentor me? I think I was fortunate during my career to have met and had some early in my career to have some people who were very helpful to me. By the same token, I think I could have done a better job at networking. I think if I think back to that time, there was certainly an opportunity to do a better job of it. And I think when I think about a number of the opportunities that have come to me over my life in my career, they've come from building relationships and building networks that were helpful to my learning and also to helping me understand what maybe next opportunities were out there.
Did you find mentors early on then when you were at GM, like within the company?
Yeah. You know, I think yes, I did. And I was fortunate, I think, to work for some great people early in my career. Not always the person I was working for. It was maybe always someone who was maybe in the department, a different manager that maybe I built a relationship with. I think one of the things about me is always, I always focus on learning. It's an important part of kind of how I enjoy my job is the learning that comes with it. And so I think I always tried to seek out people who could help me learn things I didn't know. When you're young, you think you know more than you do, and very often. And so that's maybe that was a little bit of an early skill that I would jump into something new and would take stock of things. And, you know, that wow moment is when maybe you've gotten some additional responsibility and you realize you need to learn a lot more in order to really, you know, really take advantage of the opportunity that you've just been given.
What do you feel like somebody should know? Like, let's say somebody just graduated college, entering their first job. What do you feel like, what should they know about their first experience? Like, how can they maximize it to the fullest, if there's just some concise way to put it?
Yeah, I always think about first jobs, you know, such an exciting time in people's lives. In many respects, you only have one first job. I mean, really? So I think two things that I've always, when I talk to young people about how they should think about their careers, one is be open-minded. There's learning in everything. Sometimes you can look at something and say, oh, I know how to do that. But there really is learning in everything if you're open-minded. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is like I said, build relationships. You never know who's going to have that next opportunity for you. And so be open to those relationships and networking, because I think ultimately that the wider the net you cast, the more opportunity will inevitably be caught. And I think that's a hard thing in this days of COVID. I think with us being virtual in so many ways, I worry about a lot of our early employees not getting as many of those opportunities because so many of us are in a virtual environment, as opposed to, it's a little bit more difficult and certainly different than it is in a traditional sense when you're in an office, maybe more frequently.
How do you feel like somebody new in their career can like reach out to a potential mentor? Maybe they're really busy, or maybe they have like a list of mentors they want to reach out to. What's like the best process of going about it?
I think networking is hard. Hopefully, you know, in our company and in lots of other companies, there's often formal mentoring programs that can sometimes be around. Certainly take advantage of those. I think one of the ways, just as a tricks of the trade, is that in my time, I found that it was very often through maybe a friend of a friend in the business that was within General Motors at the time, who could connect me with someone. So I think, again, as you have colleagues, and maybe other colleagues might, you know, those colleagues might know other people, as, you know, who's their network and who have they found to be helpful? Or those, I found that most people want to help. Two and three, you know, the person maybe who started 2 or 3 years before you, who was in that same situation, very, very often is a key person to being able to do that. I was, you know, funny, a couple of my mentors came from, I used to run at lunch when I was started at General Motors. And some of the people that ran at lunch ended up being, you know, more senior than me, and just happened to be out running one day. And next thing you know, they're asking me about what my career is. So I think, you know, when you can find those informal, you know, whether it's clubs or organizations, a lot of like our company, we do charity work as an organization, you know, finding those opportunities outside of just what you do in your daily life and your work is trying to find those opportunities as well, I think is. Those are just some ideas of things that have worked for me in the past.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's almost like a natural human desire to want to give back.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So after being at General Motors for 5 years, Jim decided it was time to make the leap to a smaller company where he could get an opportunity to have a more significant impact.
What made you realize that it was time to move on from GM? So you were there 5 years and then you decided you wanted to move on. What made you realize you wanted to move on?
I had an incredible range of opportunities early in my career. I learned a lot and couldn't be more complimentary of my experiences that I had. By the same token, I was realizing that there weren't as many future opportunities as there would be in maybe other places. And so this was a tough time in the auto industry in those days. So, you know, there were less opportunities. So I think it was maybe a natural evolution for me to go look somewhere else where there might be, there just might be more opportunities over time. And that's, so it was a combination of that and a big company, as I mentioned before. I've always thought I wanted to work for a smaller company. Now, compared to startups, I've always worked for big companies, but I think in general, I was seeking a business that was maybe a little bit smaller, where maybe I'd have maybe what I was doing would have a little bit more impact.
So you were thinking that it's time to you've kind of gathered like some skills and experience, and the reason why you wanted to move on, or the reason why you wanted to join a small company, is because you wanted to have an impact. Is that why?
I think you can have more impact. Yeah. I think, you know, I was looking to, and I didn't join a small company. I just joined a smaller company probably.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, it was the combination of opportunity, There wasn't as many opportunities in the auto industry, at least in at General Motors at that time, as there was some downsizing and things that were going on. At the same time, I was seeing that some of the things that I had learned were becoming more important to other companies. Mm. And so there was really sort of a maybe call it a mixture of things all happening at one time that all led me to make the decision to say, hey, let's open the door to other companies.
That makes sense. So where did you go next?
I went to Allied Signal, which is now Honeywell. Honeywell is a big company today, but Allied was a small, much smaller company at the time. And I was working for a smaller division that was very independent. And, I had an opportunity to do some things there and jump into some big responsibilities pretty quickly that I don't think I would have ever had the opportunity to do at General Motors.
So what made you go back to graduate school? Because some people will say, you don't need to go to school. You can certainly be successful without going to school. You know, it's not worth the cost. I guess what at that time, why did you make that decision?
I really, Ash, I really, at that point in my life, I was probably 7 or 8 years of experience, all in some form of manufacturing.
Okay.
And I knew that I wanted, and this is, I think, part of the decision to maybe whether or not you go on, maybe you go to graduate school. For me, it was about, I wanted to inevitably run a business. I knew that at that point in my life, I knew I wanted to do that. And I thought that if I went to graduate business school, it would, it would give me those skill sets that maybe I wasn't getting while running, being in manufacturing for a long period of time. Mm. And I thought, that pivot was important to me. And I thought graduate school would accelerate that pivot to running a business. And I think that gets to the decision of why people might go back to school. The going back to graduate school is an individual decision for people. And I think in some cases, it's a great decision. And in other people, it's probably not relevant. And it has a lot to do with how much of a career change do you want? I can say that I know very few that ever made the decision to go to graduate school who regretted it. Mm. But that being said, I do think it has a lot to do with the first, what are your aspirations? And what are the experiences you've had up to this point in your life? And do you believe that those experiences and those learnings can help you get to what you aspire to do? And I think graduate school can be an accelerator to learning in places where you have gaps. And it certainly is incredible in terms of building a network. But very often people will have already been accelerated in various experiences where they don't necessarily need that kind of accelerator in graduate school. So I think that's where the personal decision comes down and the personal assessment. That's how I would think about it. It comes down to that capability assessment. And then, ultimately, what do you want to do? What is your long-term career goals?
In 2005, Jim decided to join Danaher. Now, the previous company he had been working for was acquired by Honeywell, a large conglomerate you've probably heard of before. Danaher is now, today, a publicly traded and globally recognized science and technology innovator. But back then, Jim felt excited about the potential of joining a smaller company so he could have a greater impact. And it was the first time he'd been reporting to the president of the business. Jim would end up spending over 10 years of his career at Danaher.
So after you graduated, your next role was at Danaher?
Danaher, yep.
What was your initial role there? I guess first, how did you get that opportunity, the story about how you got that opportunity, and then what was your initial role there?
Danaher, it was another place of going to a smaller company. Mm-hmm. Again, Allied was still a big company, and I was seeking a smaller company. And one of the interesting things about Danaher is that while it was a company of some size, it was a lot of small companies. And so I was really excited about the idea of being part of a leadership team running a business. I reported to the president of the business. It was the first time I reported to a president of a business.
I know you spent like over a decade there. What do you feel like was it that kept you at Danaher? Was it the intellectual stimulation? Was it the growth you were seeing? Was it like, what was it that kept you there?
Ash, I really think about my career decisions. I really based my career decisions my whole life on three criteria. Am I learning? Am I adding value? And am I working with people that I really think are outstanding? I worked for Danaher for 2 decades and never even considered leaving because those three things were always the awesome meter on those three things was always pegged to the highest level. And
are you learning? Are you enjoying the people you work with? And then what was the third one?
And do you add value? Can you add value? Are you having an impact? Right. I think if, you know, what we try to talk to all our folks is, you know, if you're not having an impact, if you're not making a difference, I think that's unfortunate. We're not fulfilling our obligation to people if we're not putting them in, giving them opportunities where they can have impact. Because I think we all want to, at the end of the day, we spend a lot of time at work. We don't want to do that not thinking that we're not doing anything but having positive impact.
Was there ever a moment where you felt like you kind of struggled a little bit?
I think you have struggles all the time. I think that's part of everyone's career journey is dealing with those struggles, and they can come in a lot of different ways. It could be a bad boss. It can be it could be the business is having challenges and that doesn't feel as good. So yeah, I mean, I think over my whole career, but certainly Danner, I had times where I had a major customer that wasn't very happy with us, and you know, I had to go visit them pretty frequently, and you know, it was a very tough time. We had some challenges with some of our technology that wasn't working the way we wanted it to work and the way they had envisioned it to work. It was a tough balance of making them happy, even though they were probably being more demanding than what we had originally anticipated with the technology. So trying to find that balance and work towards a balanced solution that was good for us, you know, was good for them and for us was a real challenge. And that was my first president's job. I was literally 3 weeks into the job when I had to start dealing with that. So I think, yeah, you those are low points of your career when you have those tough challenges, and certainly have many of those over time, whether it be a customer, you lose some business at a customer, or, you know, a product that you envision doesn't do well. Those are the challenges that you're going to have in life. And I've had all kinds of them. With the amount of time that I've now been working, you get a little bit of wisdom.
Yeah.
And what you learn from what, you know, there's some pieces to that wisdom, but one of them is resiliency. And, you know, you're going to get knocked down. So it's not a question of being knocked down. It's a question of how quickly you get up. And I think, you know, I think to me, that is something that we try to instill on our team is that, you know, you're going to take, we want you to take risks. We know that that's going to mean at times you fail. But we understand that, and we want to make sure that we're resilient in that failure so that we understand that we learned something. We don't make the same mistake twice, and that we're resilient enough to deal with sometimes the setbacks that may come with a little bit of failure. But we know over the long period of time, we're going to be in a much better place if we celebrate some of those failures at times.
You were able to have a great impact. What do you feel like enabled you to have a great impact? Like if you could really distill it down to a few things.
I think there were two things. One is I was always willing to, I've always been a person that believed in the team, and I was never really all that concerned about exactly what I was doing. And so I think one of the things that I sort of became one of the leaders who was always willing to go off and try to do new things. So when we were starting to build our businesses around the world in different markets, whether it be China or India or the Middle East, I was one of the leaders who led some of those efforts, because I was always someone who didn't necessarily know a lot about those places at first, but I was willing to go spend a lot of time in those markets. So coming back to your question, I would say, number one, always willing to do what it takes to make the team successful, and if that meant doing something new that I was on, that I didn't, you know, that that maybe I wouldn't be successful at, but was willing to take the risk. I think I was always one of those people. I think number two, I really believed in our culture. And I think I was one of those leaders that really tried to help build our culture for the company. And I was sort of seen as a little bit of the person who really, really was trying to build something that would be very sustainable beyond any one individual. And so I think the cultural aspects of things that I was trying to do, and that really got to the kind of talent we brought into the organization that ultimately could, you know, build a very big and growing enterprise.
Yeah.
And I think the third thing is, you know, I'm a very results driven person. You know, I was a bad athlete in high school, but I was on a lot of winning teams and I got used to that. And, you know, and I think at the end of the day, that the desire to want to win as a team never left me from the early days of my life. And I think I was always someone who was always trying to be part of a winning team and do whatever it took to be a part of the winning team. And I think, you know, I was successful in that. And I think I was rewarded for being a valuable person on the team.
I'm just super curious. You know, you say you focused on the culture. What does it tangibly look like for you?
We had a culture of humility and transparency and open and honest feedback. And I think because we were really always trying to make the company better. And so I think it was exemplifying those key core components of the culture, being honest with people, being transparent about what was going on, not being political. And I think we tried to always have a culture where, you know, if you wanted to send an email to the CEO, you could do that. And I get emails from employees all the time, even today, because, you know, people have something on their mind. I want them to feel like they can talk to us and they can tell us what's going on. And I think that culture of openness and honesty has been so important to who we've been over the years and continues to be an important part of Fortive as well.
In 2016, the executives at Danaher made a strategic decision to spin off Fortive as a separate company. And the reasoning behind it was that Danaher's business was focused on life sciences and innovation in the medical space, while Fortive's business was focused on technologies for industrial applications. Since they had two distinct end consumers, they decided it was best to separate the entities. Now, when that happened, Jim was asked to be the CEO of Fortive, and he would now be running a publicly traded business with 25,000 employees, something he admits wasn't necessarily prepared for.
Well, you know, Ash, I always tell our employees, I never really wanted to be CEO. And I'm not sure they feel good about that. But the point was, I was part of a great team. I was enjoying what I was doing. Those core tenets that I talked about were remaining, and I love the company. But when I was offered the opportunity, I was excited about it. It was a little bit like we used to call it our $6 billion startup, because, you know, we were starting a company from brand new, a new public company traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Brand new. And we had to create everything, right, to be a public company. And we had about 9 months to do it or 10 months to do it. And we had to start. And so, yeah, there were tons of feelings. I talked about that feeling of, wow, I don't know everything of how to do this and how am I going to do this. That was certainly there. And there were a lot of things I knew how to do and I knew the businesses, but running a public company, setting up a board, all those things were all brand new.
I was telling my dad, I was telling people, my dad works for Boeing. I was telling, like, you know, my friends, and I was like, hey, you know, we'll be talking to Jim Lico. Have you guys heard of Fortive? Fortive Corporation? Like, Fortive. I'm like, they're a Fortune 500. How do you not know Fortive?
And in town, right? I mean, but you know, Ash, maybe this is interesting for you. Maybe I don't know if it's interesting to your listeners. We really want to make sure that our stakeholders know who we are. You know, our investors, our customers, the communities in which we live, and most importantly, our employees. But we're not a company that necessarily is going to advertise our Fortive brand. What we're going to advertise is the brands within our businesses that are so important to our customers. And so people will know us as Fluke. They'll know us as Tektronix. They'll know us as Advanced Sterilization Products. But they won't necessarily know that Fortive owns those companies. But they know what we do, and the passion from our customers around our brands is second to none.
You know, your leadership style, obviously, it emphasizes inspiration and optimism. And I think you've mentioned somewhere, if I'm not mistaken, that you believe in being the chief optimist, if you will.
Yeah.
You say that it's extremely important to inspire others. How do you inspire others? Like, what are some of the mechanics that you can kind of give us to help us inspire others around us? Like, how do you inspire others personally?
You know, I get a chance to see everything going on in the company, and that's a unique perspective. And I think the first thing I have a real responsibility to do is to help everybody understand what's possible. I think very often when we get in our jobs day to day, we sometimes lose sight of the long-term potential of what we're doing. And so I think first and foremost is to constantly bring people back to why we're doing what we're doing. You know, we have a shared purpose of essential technology for the people who accelerate progress. And that really is about helping our organizations understand that our technologies matter in the world, that they make a difference, that they're we're changing people's lives in the work we do with customers. The world is progressing at a faster pace because of the work we do. And that helps everybody understand that what they're doing every day matters and hopefully inspires them to consistently look at how we can make things better so that we can make the world an even better place. So what I try to do is come back to that shared purpose and draw on lots of things that we're doing that are examples of that every day so that people can see it, they can touch it, and it becomes real. Because I think you have to be authentic when you're an optimist. You can't just run around saying things are great. You have to be authentic. You have to find your own style.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to put it into words that are comfortable for yourself. And then I would say the second piece of that is we talk about our say-do ratio. And that is if we're going to say, you know, what is our ratio of the things we say and do we go do it? And we want a high say-do ratio. If we're set, you know, when you talk about optimism, you're talking about things we're going to go do. And when we actually go and do those things, then ultimately I think the organization understands that this isn't just words, that there's actions behind those words. And I think that's a key part of authenticity.
So in a way, you constantly remind people why we're doing what we're doing, why you're doing what you're doing.
Right. And we do that with our leadership. So they know what they're working on. Everything we work on is around trying to give people examples of how those things are meaningful.
It's powerful. And it's something that you have to constantly do, I assume, as a leader. It's just like, you can't just tell somebody, you know, it's not inspiring. Just like, oh, you inspire somebody. Now they're good. You have to continuously.
Yeah. And repetition is important because, you know, we forget, right? We get busy. We have these, you know, we've got lots, and particularly over the last, this past year where, you know, our team members all over the world are more challenged than ever before with things going on at home and the safety of their family and friends. And so it's even more important during challenging times to really keep reminding people that, you know, what we're all about and what we're trying to achieve and why that's important in the world at large.
So Jim, if you were to meet the 25-year-old Jim, what advice would you give to him?
Live abroad. Yeah, I never lived abroad, and I realized running global businesses for a long time, I wish I'd lived overseas for a period early in my career.
Interesting. I've never heard that one. So, or you're saying the reason is because you knew that you wanted to run a business or a global business, and in order to run a global business, you kind of need to understand the culture of different.
Yeah, I think the ability, you know, diversity of thought and diversity of thinking is so important to being a part of running a global business and living in different. I've spent a lot of time outside of the United States over the last 20 years, I wish I would have had the opportunity to live abroad. And I think if people get that opportunity to live in a different culture, I think the perspectives you get from that are incredibly helpful to your career.
What in your life do you feel like has given you the greatest sense of fulfillment?
Well, it's easy. My family. I mean, that one's easy. In my professional life, I think it would say the opportunity to create a company that makes a difference in the world and is really just makes life just fun.
What's the story? By the way, I'm just super curious. Did you meet your wife in college? Was it somebody? Just like what's your marriage story?
I met. Well, it's my happiest day of my life. If you want to know it, so the happiest day of my life. I met my wife at work, and the happiest day of my life is the day, it is the same day I asked my wife to marry me, and I took the job at Danaher on the very same day. Same day in July, I accepted the job with Danaher, and I asked my wife to marry me. I became a father on the same day, so I became a father.
Okay.
And I changed company, and I got married. So those are all on the same day.
All on the same day, okay.
Yeah, and then we had two more kids, so we have three kids now, and they're all out of the house now.
Very cool. So you obviously just answered the next question, so I'll go to the next one. If Jim Ash Leko could be remembered for just one thing, what would that be?
Yeah, it's such a great question because I think as you get older, you think about that question. It's not necessarily something you think about early in your life, but as you get as you've been around a little bit, you do give that a little bit of thought. I think, you know, certainly it's easy to say in the sense of you want to be you know, you want your family to think of you as a great husband and a great father. That's I think such an important part of my personal makeup. But and I think more broadly, having an opportunity to run businesses and be a part of thousands of people's lives over a long period of time, I really think it's about, you know, people saying, you know, that I had a positive impact on their lives, whether it was their career or what I did to help a business be successful that ultimately led to, you know, more doing things better and having more impact on the world. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to people. We don't do this, you know, we love the technology, we love the products. Those are the fun things about working in technology companies. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to people and the relationships you build and the impact you can have on people's lives. And if that can be seen as a positive over a long period of time, I think you did a pretty good job.
I like that. In your opinion, what do you feel like the most important life skill is?
Resiliency. I think resiliency and determination. I think those two. I think you can't predict in life what things will happen to you. What you can predict is how you react to it. And I think the more determined and the more resilient you can be to challenges, I think at the end of the day, you're going to be well served to deal with the, you know, all the highs and lows that come in both a career and a personal life. You know, and that's what we talk about at Fortive is the ability to deal with challenges. And as I said before, you know, we're all going to get knocked down in our careers. It's how quickly we get up. It will be how we're judged.
What is the best advice somebody has ever given you?
Well, I said it. So I talked about it too early. I said it was my dad's advice. You know, it said, "I'll pay you the compliment of high expectations." That has been my mantra for pretty much my whole life.
I thought you were going to say Lucy's advice to not use your hands or something.
That would be the second thing. Well, I have a lot of good advice that I get from my staff on a regular basis, but some of that can't be put in an audio file.
And the last one is, I feel like I have an idea of what this is, but if you were stranded on an island and you had access to just one meal, what would that meal be for you?
My wife would want me to say something healthy, but I would say a great hamburger and French fries.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say like lasagna or something Italian or pasta.
Yeah, you know, I thought about putting my... but I think sometimes I think about these answers, like if my family heard it, well, you know, would they call me on it?
Thank you so much for listening. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It only takes a few seconds, but it's worth so much to us. We are helping new professionals in a very unique way, and we need people to hear about it. We need you to help us reach more people by leaving us a rating and review. We hope to see you again next week. Take care.